SpaceX and Anthropic inking a deal, turning potential losses into profits. Frank, can you break it down for us? What does it mean for SpaceX? What does it mean for Anthropic? And then ultimately, what does it mean for the data centers and the economics there?
Yeah, so Anthropic and SpaceX have inked a deal. They're no longer misanthropic in Elon's minds. He's talked to them and understands they're building good AGI, not evil AGI. Anthropic has been in the news lately because they have seen so much demand for Claude and their AI models that they have run out of compute. So they have been, over the last few weeks, creating various levels of usage restriction. So you can't use, you have limited tokens on the models. That also cuts off the amount of compute they have available for research. So they've been going to different parties and trying to ink deals to get access to more compute in a short amount of time. And who has access to a lot of compute and has been very good at building data centers is Elon and SpaceX and XAI. And so as part of this deal, the Colossus One data center, which is about 300 megawatts and 220,000 GPUs, is being leased to Anthropic to support more inference on their services. As part of that, Anthropic is lifting the capacity restrictions that they had put in place. And Anthropic expressed interest in multiple gigawatts of space-based compute when the time is right from the SpaceX side. So all of this, is additional color and support that SpaceX can serve as this infrastructure as a service provider going into a hotly anticipated IPO, and also relieves a key bottleneck that Anthropic has been acutely facing in the last few months.
It is interesting. I feel like that you didn't include Anthropic had previously cut off XAI at the model layer, and now they need power. They need the compute. And so they come back and sign a deal. I wonder if they're opening up back access at that layer.
Yeah, good question. I don't know. The background on that story is that many of the competitors use each other's models, one, to understand how good they are, and two, because if you're not on the frontier, you still want to be using the frontier models to help you catch up to the frontier. So XAI was using Anthropic models through Cursor, and Anthropic instantiated a policy to cut off their competitors from doing that. So I don't know if they're reopening access, but they're certainly on speaking terms again.
One of the interesting things that I read about this deal, one, I think it's obvious. Obviously, SpaceX is going to sell some of its compute and retain some for current use, for its own internal use, just like it does with Launch. Launch, they have actually a very healthy and robust and seemingly profitable, for everything we can see, kind of launch services that is sometimes launching competitive products to theirs up into space. And they use Launch for Starlink, which is itself a great ROI case. For the AI compute that they're going to launch into space, some of it will be used to serve probably Anthropic models and maybe also Google models, because the world is short compute. And this is another way to kind of get AI compute online and powered up. And it's luckily a way that people are less likely to throw themselves in front of the bulldozers as it's getting kind of built out. And so it actually might, come online in an accelerating way. And SpaceX, in addition to selling it externally, is going to use it to power Grok and to, monetize Grok if all goes well. And so it seems obvious that this would occur. I was reading an analysis of the Colossus One data center, which SpaceX is leasing out, suggesting that because it has, a mixed set of chips in it, it's not ideally suited for AI training, which is what SpaceX needs to catch up to the frontier, but it's plenty good for inference. And SpaceX XAI doesn't have as much inference demand clearly as Anthropic. And so in some ways it's like, hey, this is efficient use of capital. We have a very valuable asset to someone else that's less valuable to us now because we're going to be training in the Colossus 2 data center. Let's monetize this. It not only cleans up the financials for the IPO and indicates we can do this, but also it's just like good, efficient kind of marketing of the capital that you've deployed.
So I agree that it's not a free trade. They're giving up some portion of compute and GPUs so that if these new models are in demand, like Anthropic's new models are in demand, they will have 300 less megawatts of compute to serve those models. So they're making an efficient allocation decision, but it does take some optionality in the future off the table and will present new issues if all of a sudden they have demand to fill up those 220,000 GPUs that they no longer, well.
But that's where I disagree with you. That is true for Anthropic, but less true, and this is why SpaceX is such a compelling story for SpaceX, right? It's like being the vertical integration from inference of models all the way through fabrication of chips makes it so that's not as big a concern.
Well, right? It depends on the time horizon you're talking about, because you can't just recreate 220,000 chips in a 300 megawatt data center overnight. And that's why Anthropic is turning to XAI instead of doing it themselves.
Yes, but it's like SpaceX, all things considered, could do it in 2 months. Anthropic would likely take them a year if we're just going by like historical norms.
Yes. Two months, not today. 2 months. Right. A few years from now.
The market to find gigawatt scale campuses is a lot more competitive than it was 2 years ago.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And SpaceX will just have a different way to do it. So I'm less concerned about it. I don't think, or maybe this is wrong, but I think it's pretty reasonable to assert that Grok is not going to suddenly turn an enterprise corner over the next 6 months and be monetizing at the same rate as OpenAI, Codex, and Anthropic are. Measured over a few years, it might be, but at that point, they will probably be beginning to loft meaningful volumes of AI compute into space, and so they'll have another mechanism by which to solve their inference problem. And in the meantime, going to market with a story, going to the public markets with a story of, hey, we have all of this money we're going to invest in compute. This is the ROI we're going to get on it, even if Grok doesn't work, is really important to kind of assuage institutional shareholders who want a de-risked story rather than a risk story. Frank, Sam, could you share, what are the economics of these gigawatts? Give us the like very high level how this all plays into monetization.
Sure. First, let's contextualize a gigawatt. I'll do it on the electricity side. Frank, maybe you want to do it on the what it means from a model side. From an electricity side, it's essentially powering a city. At 1 gigawatt is like powering a SF, essentially. It's a million homes. Think about it like that. Frank, what does it mean to a model provider?
So rough general example, and these are from a great lecture given by Chase, the CEO of Crusoe, who's building a lot of these data center campuses. So I think he's a good source to pull from. But rough back of the envelope math, if you're filling a gigawatt's worth of GPUs into a data center, it's hundreds of thousands of GPUs. And in terms of capital outlay, it's about $60 billion in total cost. About $19 billion of that is the labor plus materials to build the surrounding data center facility in addition to the cooling and power infrastructure. And then about $40 billion worth of what you'd call the IT equipment inside the facility. And of that 40, 75% of it, or $30 billion, are the GPUs themselves. So to build out a gigawatt, it's going to cost you roughly $60 billion. Half of that capital outlay is going towards GPUs. And then if you're looking at the economics, current going rate of how much that infrastructure can turn in revenue per year, if you are renting out that gigawatt as kind of infrastructure as a service, so you find a tenant like Anthropic and you're giving them access to the GPUs, the compute power of the facility, it's about $15 billion a year in revenue opportunity. And then it depends on how good your model is and what you're able to price it. But if you're a model company, you can make on a gigawatt about $30 billion of revenue per year. This is to give one example outside of Chase's of how this math roughly maths. Sarah Friar from OpenAI published a blog at the beginning of this year that showed how OpenAI's revenue has scaled with their compute capacity. As of the beginning of the year, they were generating $20 billion of revenue on about 2 gigawatts. But important to factor in there is that's including training and inference compute. If you take this like rough industry estimate that half the compute is going towards training and half is going towards inference, that means they were doing $20 billion in revenue on 1 gigawatt. And since that period of time, OpenAI has doubled the price of their frontier model. So you can see how you could be turning, especially because demand is fully, both companies, OpenAI and Anthropic, are relatively supply constrained, which means the GPUs are running towards the max end of their utilization. OpenAI reasonably could be doing $30 billion per gigawatt now. So if you are the infrastructure developer and you are fully vertically integrated, you can pay yourself back in 2 years on these facilities. If you're more like a CoreWeave of the world, you could pay yourself back in 4 years. And the chips last, at least right now, the chips are still useful beyond that. And the broader facility, power plant, cooling that they go in lasts much longer than that.
Okay. But Frank, I feel like an important part was SemiAnalysis, chiming in here as well, which is as these models become 100x, 1000x more capable per watt, what does that mean in terms of revenue on a gigawatt basis?
Yeah, I think the general trend is that the revenue you can generate per watt is going up over time. And the reason, because if you just like work your way up the stack, NVIDIA, generation on generation, always has some impressive performance leap, sometimes like 2 to 3x on training, or, you know, for the inference optimized SKUs, it could be 10 to 30x plus of better performance per watt on the inference side. So you're able to produce, all else equal, more revenue per watt on the newer generation of NVIDIA chips than the older generation. Now, every layer of the stack captures some of that productivity increase, including the end consumers of the models. So NVIDIA will charge a little bit more, but not 2x more. And then up the stack, the model builders like OpenAI and Anthropic can charge a little bit more for their models. But what they really do is they train a bigger model and they pass on a lot of that productivity gain as I would call it like a consumer surplus in the form of either lower token cost or more intelligence per dollar that you're getting. But the net result of it is we're getting more intelligence per watt over time, and there's a lot of willingness to pay for this digital intelligence right now.
All right. Yeah, and I think they've entered a domain where suddenly actually monetization capability has really turned on. As in, an improvement here relative to an improvement last year actually really makes it. There was some threshold we crossed over the last couple months, combination of underlying power of models packaged into codecs and Claude Cowork, where A, for general purpose knowledge workers, this is really utility delivering and productivity delivering. So now people are like, yes, we're willing to pay. In fact, give us all that you can. We want all of it. So yeah. Then a marginal improvement here, one, it means they have much more pricing power than they did, because before it was like, yeah, this is interesting. I can kind of use this in interesting ways, and kind of, I have to be kind of a nerd and really willing to work with it to use it in interesting ways. And now it's like every knowledge worker in the workforce is like, I could use this, you know? And so then kind of like their incremental capability, I think, becomes much more monetizable, where it's rather than being like, I'm paying for the software that I think is interesting in productivity delivering, but I'm only going to pay 10% of the productivity value of it because I don't, not really sure about the ROI I get here, to suddenly like my workforce is begging to use these tools and is going to use the heck out of them. And so then I'm willing to push the budget into something that's much more comparable to my kind of like wage spend on that workforce, where it's like, oh, I can, you know, do twice as much or avoid a hire or whatever. And so I think that the kind of there has been growth in monetization per watt that has been higher than growth in cost per watt of infrastructure as a service. Like, that's happened on monetized watts. And I think it's actually going to inflect here, where you're going to get huge.
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 VCN20210130.
Basically pricing power at the model delivery level with, you know, some probably incremental pricing power at the infrastructure as a service level because we're compute constrained, but it's going to shift kind of margins up on both sides of the stack as we hit this spot where it's like you can make a case for trillions of dollars of spend in kind of AI enterprise software. And right now we're still in tens of billions, high tens of billions of dollars of spend probably in AI enterprise software. So you can have a 10x increase in demand and it'll just drive, you know, margins into both parts of the stack.
Okay, but now let's do the comparison to space. So to recap what Frank said, and Frank, jump in here if I'm butchering this. We'll say roughly $20 billion as the bottom to actually build the data center itself, which is crazy. You've got $30 billion on top of that, which is the GPUs themselves. And then you've got $10 billion on top of that, and that's, you know, other AI infrastructure, CPU, memory.
Networking, storage.
Networking.
Yeah.
Okay. So then all else equal, the GPU and the other AI is pretty much the same for space. You need the GPUs and the other AI infrastructure, you know, different networking. You got to put solar panels on there and you got satellite buses. I actually think it washes out pretty smoothly in terms of what it's going to look like. And so then the question is, can you launch a gigawatt of satellites for under $20 billion? And it's like, that math is very simple. And the answer is yes. Almost certainly, right? It's like, if Starship works, then, you know, just to put this in some context here, let's say it costs $150 million to build Starship and it's got 150,000 kilograms to low Earth orbit. If you were to not reuse it at all, then, you know, that would be $1,000 per kilogram. That would be $25 billion to launch a gigawatt. So that would be more than terrestrial. But if you were to just reuse it five times, that cost collapses to $300 per kilogram, and it's just $7.5 billion to launch a gigawatt to orbit. And so this is why Starship and launch costs are so critical for the economics here. But 20, in my opinion, humble space advocate opinion, $20 billion is such a high bar to be able to come under.
I'll be the devil's advocate here. Are you accounting for, because like within that $20 billion to build the...
请关注公众号,思维纪要社,更多纪要请加VCN2021-0130.
The data center, power, cooling, etc. Like, you still need to build your solar panels, like that's in your number, right? You still need the labor and the materials. Like a surprising amount of that $20 billion is concrete and like steel, right? Because you're building this data center. And instead of having like one massive building, you're launching like 1 megawatt satellites. So you're launching 1,000 satellites. That's more materials, not less.
Right. But so then this is where it's like the cost shifts. When I'm saying the satellite cost washes out in the $30 billion of GPUs plus $10 billion of other, it's like the materials costs go into that bucket now for space. So it's like the cost of the satellite is inclusive of the cost of solar, the cost of the bus of the satellite, the cost of the GPUs in the satellite. And so the real question, well, it's like $5 billion of the $20 billion to build the data center is labor. That's crazy.
But it's like, not going away. Do you need less labor to build satellites? Or
yes, because you.
Well, yeah, because when you're building, when you're digging into the dirt, it's like every data center is its own data center, whereas you can kind of like build a manufacturing system for the satellite stuff. Mm-hmm. So that is the kind of like there. I remember back when I was looking at nuclear power in 2000, right before Fukushima, which good timing, right? But that was 2010, 2011, I guess. What they were talking about was still building big nuclear plants, but trying to modularize production where you do kind of like manufacturing in kind of like serial and then you bring it on site. But it didn't totally work because you're still suddenly you're on site and like the terrain is different than you expected. And, you know, and so any time you can go from I am in the dirt digging to I am on a manufacturing production line producing component pieces that then feed into a system, you can get a lot of cost efficiencies out of that.
That's interesting.
And the way we overall model it, there's already a known cost per kilogram to produce the Starlink satellites are known and inferred. So we basically take the chip costs of NVIDIA you can make some assumptions about the fact that SpaceX XAI is going to vertically integrate into chips, and that, and so then they don't have to pay as high margins for those chips. But, you know, even at the NVIDIA chip costs, NVIDIA margins, then you have bulk, rest of bulk of satellite at similar cost economics as the Starlink satellites on a per kilowatt basis. And then it resolves to like how much actual mass do you need for your radiator and stuff, which then feeds into launch costs. And so net, it looks compelling, beginning at 300 per kilogram in launch. And I think there is a very, like, wherever the crossover point is, I am very highly convinced that they're going to continue to get better at it. Whereas it's not so obvious that data centers are going to be built more and more efficiently. If anything, it seems like the cost of finding the spot and motivating in power is going to get harder and harder. And anecdotally, I've heard of like people are now looking at 100 megawatt sites, whereas before they're like, oh, we weren't going to do a 100 megawatt site, but they need to really, they're trying to piece it all together. And that creates its own set of operational headaches and burdens of like, well, now I'm managing 10 sites instead of one site. That's its own kind of set of stacked complications for any team.
Well, yeah, this brings up a good point, which I'm often thinking about, which is like the scarcity on Earth relative to the scalability of space is like a critical part of the dynamic here, where like, in my opinion, if there is scarcity on Earth and you can't deploy gigawatts as fast as you want to deploy gigawatts, you don't need to wait until you hit $300 per kilogram of like the break-even cost. Like, I think Anthropic would pay 50 to 100% more per watt just to get the compute available. And that's kind of the value proposition, rather than like, if the end state is you save 25%, I'm going to be the one doing the math of like, I save 25%, but the whole thing burns up in the atmosphere in 6 years versus some amount of this CapEx lives for 20 to 30 years. And there's a chance that these 5-year-old GPUs still have some amount of revenue in excess of the operating costs that I can scrape, that like, I'll take the Earth one because the long duration of this is maybe optionality. Even if there isn't, there's some optionality there that space doesn't give me. But if the Earth one isn't an option, then space makes sense at double the cost.
Well, that and what you were saying before, which is right now the $15 billion per gigawatt for infrastructure as a service, $30 billion for AI services, it's like that revenue number is going up, not down, at least in our opinion. And so, you know, even if there's not scarcity, the degree to which that number goes up, then your launch cost break even also goes up.
Right. Yeah, so but it's you could do the same math on Earth, though, because it's a gig, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's going up because there's scarcity. I mean, I think that's what it resolves to. And like, think about it. There's another way to frame it, which is the performance per watt is increasing at some very high level. It's like at least 2x year over year. So imagine you're an AI company. You're like, well, why should I buy a watt today when I can wait till tomorrow to get twice the performance tomorrow? But clearly they're seeing ROI on it higher than 2x year over year because they're buying the watts today. In fact, they're desperate for them.
Yes.
And so then that means like velocity to market is much more important than the marginal price here. As in, there's probably, given what Anthropic is seeing right now, who knows what they signed this SpaceX XAI deal at, but I'm sure they are willing to pay some very, very high premium relative to what compute was trading at even last year to just service the customers they've onboarded so far, so they don't squander their strategic kind of foothold they have across all these enterprises. So I do think that there's a kind of like, you know, just being able to say with certainty, this year I'm going to provide this many gigawatts of kind of AI, and that timeline, you know, at some point, at first the timelines for SpaceX XAI will almost certainly slip because it's like, you know, launch and everything.
Space.
But once they begin to actually turn the crank, then they'll have much more predictable timelines than terrestrial, and that provides its own strategic optionality.
When do we get the trillion dollar question is, when do we get to this point of like repeatable, turn the crank, start shipping megawatts regularly into space?
That's a great question. Stay tuned for update to our open source model.
Brett, I have an idea.
Yeah. What's your take?
But I think it's 28-29 is probably when they begin to turn it on. And then it scales. So then you're making assumptions. For one, they have so much opportunity in Starlink, it's hard to turn it down. As in, and that'll be like the first best use of the Starship as they're scaling that up and getting that repeatable and launchable. And they'll throw some resources at AI compute, both to, you know, show they can do it and to begin scaling up the manufacture of those satellites. But if you do all of the kind of like how much time to scale up manufacturing on the satellite side and how much time for Starship to kind of like harden and season and get repeatable, you're in the late 2020s before you begin to say, now we're doing, you know, this many, you know, not even gigawatts, but like, you know, megawatts of compute scaling to gigawatts and getting into the tens of gigawatts. I think it's really in early 2030s before they're in the tens of gigawatts per year in launch. And that's, you know, if you do the math on all that, it actually turns out to be a very optimistic case. So, you know, 10 gigawatts, if you're selling it as infrastructure as a service and you can command $15 billion per gigawatt there, you're talking about $150 billion in revenue at least attached. And if you do software monetization on top, you know, maybe double or more of it. So.
Do you guys, another curious question on my part, but what is global gigawatts of solar panel production outside of China per year?
Well, it's about to dramatically increase.
I think the U.S. does 80 gigawatts in demand, but I don't know on the supply side. I think it's, I want to say there's 400 to 500 gigawatts of demand global, and I'm sure vast majority sourced from China.
Okay, quick. So I think we can summarize. We think this is a great deal for both parties. It seems to make sense for both of them. We've broken down that the space versus terrestrial on a gigawatt basis. Maybe a question for another time, but Brett, we're bullish on nuclear, and we also recognize the difficulty of large-scale projects. Does this just come down to small modular reactors being small and easier to fabricate many of them, or is this a conflicting point of view?
Well, one, the small modular reactor companies are typically designing their products so that you could do one or you could do like a package of multiple. And I don't know. I think that there's definitely room for gigawatt plants out there to power data centers. And I would expect that you will have kind of like smaller plants be the more dominant form factor over time, just because it's easier to slot them in. But I don't know. I think, what do you think? You've covered the space.
No, I mean, I think that's why it's like, it would be great if we had a gigawatt nuclear renaissance, and that's what's happening in China. I think the reality is in the US, smaller infrastructure projects are infinitely more likely to scale than massive ones.
Yeah. And kind of like for supporting a city, you know, you don't need a gig. In China, they were building new cities for a while. They still are, but not to the same degree. So they needed like a new chunky gigawatt. You know, here we need 45 megawatts to offset a coal plant that's retiring and stuff. So data center offers an opportunity to like, you know, do chunkier projects that actually fit with demand. I think. You'll see a mix, but I think a smaller form factor is ultimately what's going to win.
All right. Thank you everyone for joining us. This is a nice recap on very exciting news, and we'll see everyone next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.